the very remarkable change in the behavior of the people as we afterward went through the town. Remarkable scenes at Bolton. We came to Bolton about 5 in the evening. We had no sooner entered the main street than we perceived the lions at Rochdale were lambs in comparison to those at Bolton. Such rage and bitterness I scarcely ever saw before in any creatures that bore the form of men. They followed us in full cry to the house where we went, and as soon as we had gone in, took possession of all the avenues to it, and filled the street from one end to the other. After some time the waves did not roar quite so loud. Mr. P. thought he might then venture out. They immediately closed in, threw him down, and rolled him in the mire, so that when he scrambled from them and got into the house again, one could scarcely tell what or who he was. When the first stone came among us through the window, I expected a shower to follow, and the rather, because they had now procured a bell to call their whole forces together. But they did not design to carry on the attack at a distance. Presently one ran up and told us the mob had burst into the house. He added that they had got J.B. in the midst of them. They had, and he laid hold on the opportunity to tell them of the terrors of the Lord. Meantime, D.T. engaged another part of them with smoother and softer words. Believing the time was now come, I walked down into the thickest of them. They had now filled all the rooms below. I called for a chair. The winds were hushed, and all was calm and still. My heart was filled with love, my eyes with tears, and my mouth with arguments. They were amazed, they were ashamed, they were melted down, they devoured every word. What a turn was this! Oh, how did God change the counsel of the old Ahithophel into foolishness and bring all the drunkards, swearers, Sabbath breakers, and mere sinners in the place to hear his plenteous redemption. Thursday the 19th. Abundantly more than the house could contain were present at 5 in the morning, to whom I was constrained to speak a good deal longer than I am accustomed to do. Perceiving they still wanted to hear, I promised to preach again at 9 in a meadow near the town. Thither they flocked from every side, and I called aloud, "All things are ready, come unto the marriage." Matthew 22:4. Oh, how have a few hours changed the scene! We could now walk through every street of the town, and none molested or opened his mouth unless to thank or bless us. Wesley at Dudley and Birmingham. On Tuesday the 24th about noon we came to Dudley. At 1 I went to the marketplace and proclaimed the name of the Lord to a huge, unwieldy, noisy multitude. The greater part of them seemed in no wise to know wherefore they were come together. I continued speaking about half an hour, and many grew serious and attentive, till some of Satan's servants pressed in, raging and blaspheming, and throwing whatever came to hand. I then retired to the house from which I came. The multitude poured after, and covered over with dirt many that were near me, but I had only a few specks. I preached on Wednesday at 4 to a nobler people, and was greatly comforted among them. So I was likewise in the morning Wednesday 25th. How does a praying congregation strengthen the preacher? After preaching again at 1, I rode to Birmingham. This had been long a dry, uncomfortable place, so I expected little good here, but I was happily disappointed. Such a congregation I never saw there before, not a scoffer nor a trifler, not an inattentive person, so far as I could discern among them, and seldom have I known so deep, solemn a sense of the power, the presence, and love of God. The same blessing we had at the meeting of the society, and again at the morning preaching. Will then God at length cause even this barren wilderness to blossom and bud as the rose? Wesley in Wales, 1750. Sunday, January 28th. I read prayers in London, and Mr. Whitfield preached. How wise is God in giving different talents to different preachers. Even the little improprieties, both of his language and manner, were a means of profiting many, who would not have been touched by a more correct discourse or a more calm and regular manner of speaking. Tuesday, March 6th, Bristol. I began writing a short French grammar. We observed Wednesday the 7th as a day of fasting and prayer. Sunday the 11th. I should willingly have spent more time in Bristol, finding more and more proofs that God was reviving his work. But the accounts I received from Ireland made me think it my duty to be there as soon as possible. So on Monday the 19th, I set out with Christopher Hopper for the new passage. When we came there, the wind was high and almost full against us. Nevertheless, we crossed in less than 2 hours and reached Cardiff before night, where I preached at 7 and found much refreshment. Tuesday the 20th. Expecting to preach at Aberdare, 16 Welsh miles from Cardiff, I rode thither over the mountains, but we found no notice had been given, so after resting an hour, we set out for Breakneck. The wind did not intermit at all till we came within sight of it. Twice my horse fell down and threw me over his head, but without any hurt either to man or beast. Wednesday the 21st, we rode to Wolf, where we found notice had been given that Howell Harris would preach at noon. By this means, a large congregation was assembled, but Howell did not come. So at their request, I preached. Between 4 and 5, Mr. Phillips set out with us for Rhoyader. I was much out of order in the morning, however. I held out to Llanidos and then lay down. After an hour's sleep, I was much better and rode on to Machelin. About an hour and a half before we came to Dalgelly, the heavy rain began. We were on the brow of the hill, so we took all that came, our horses being able to go but half a foot pace. But we had amends made us at our inn. John Lewis and all his house gladly joined with us in prayer, and all we spoke to appeared willing to hear and to receive the truth in love. Friday the 23rd. Before we looked out, we heard the roaring of the wind and the beating of the rain. We took horse at 5. It rained incessantly all the way we rode, and when we came on the great mountain, 4 miles from the town, by which time I was wet from my neck to my waist, it was with great difficulty I could avoid being borne over my mare's head, the wind being ready to carry us all away. Nevertheless, about 10, we came safe to Danable, praising him who saves both man and beast. Our horses being well tired and ourselves thoroughly wet, we rested the remainder of the day, the rather because several of the family understood English, an uncommon thing in these parts. We spoke closely to these, and they appeared much affected, particularly when we all joined in prayer. Waiting for the Irish boat. Saturday, 24. We set out at 5 and at 6 came to the sands, but the tide was in so that we could not pass. So I sat down in a little cottage for 3 or 4 hours and translated Aldrich's logic. About 10 we passed, and before 5 came to Baldon Ferry and found the boat ready for us. But the boatman desired us to stay a while, saying the wind was too high and the tide too strong. The secret was that they stayed for more passengers, and it was well they did. For while we were walking to and fro, Mr. Jenkin Morgan came, at whose house, nearly halfway between the ferry and Holyhead, I had lodged 3 years before. The night soon came on, but our guide, knowing all the country, brought us safe to his own door. Sunday the 25th, I preached at Howell Thomas's in Trefolwyn Parish to a small, earnest congregation. The wind being contrary, I accepted the invitation of an honest exciseman, Mr. Holloway, to stay at his house till it should change. Here I was in a little quiet, solitary spot where no human voice was heard but those of the family. On Tuesday, I desired Mr. Hopper to ride over to Holyhead and inquire concerning our passage. He brought word that he might probably pass in a day or two, so on Wednesday we both went thither. Here we overtook John Jane, who had set out on foot from Bristol with 3 shillings in his pocket. 6 nights out of the 7 since he set out, he had been entertained by utter strangers. He went by us, we could not tell how, and reached Holyhead on Sunday with 1 penny left. By him we sent back our horses to Mr. Morgan's. I had a large congregation in the evening. It almost grieved me that I could give them but 1 sermon. Now they were at length willing to hear. About 11 we were called to go on board, the wind being quite fair, and so it continued till we were just out of the harbor. It then turned west and blew a storm. There was neither moon nor stars, but rain and wind enough, so that I was soon tired of staying on deck. But we met another storm below, for who should be there but the famous Mr. G.R. of Carnarvonshire, a clumsy, overgrown, hard-faced man. His countenance I could only compare to that which I saw in Drury Lane 30 years ago of one of the ruffians in Macbeth. I was going to lie down when he tumbled in and poured out such a volley of ribaldry, obscenity, and blasphemy, every second or third word being an oath, as was scarcely ever heard at Billingsgate. Finding there was no room for me to speak, I retired into my cabin and left him to Mr. Hopper. Soon after, one or two of his own company interposed and carried him back to his cabin. Thursday the 29th, we wrought our way 4 or 5 leagues toward Ireland, but were driven back in the afternoon to the very mouth of the harbor. Nevertheless, the wind shifting 1 or 2 points, we ventured out again, and by midnight we had gotten about half seas over. But the wind then turning full against us and blowing hard, we were driven back again and were glad about 9 to get into the bay once more. In the evening I was surprised to see, instead of some poor plain people, a room full of men daubed with gold and silver. That I might not go out of their depth, I began expounding the story of Dives and Lazarus. It was more applicable than I was aware, several of them, as I afterward learned, being eminently wicked men. I delivered my own soul, but they could in no wise bear it. One and another walked away, murmuring sorely. 4 stayed till I drew to a close, then they put on their hats and began talking to one another. I mildly reproved them, on which they rose up and went away, railing and blaspheming. I had then a comfortable hour with a company of plain, honest Welshmen. Where is the parson? In the night there was a vehement storm. Blessed be God that we were safe on shore. Saturday the 31st. I determined to wait 1 week longer, and if we could not sail then, to go and wait for a ship at Bristol. At 7 in the evening, just as I was going down to preach, I heard a huge noise and took knowledge of the rabble of gentlemen. They had now strengthened themselves with drink and numbers and placed Captain G.R., as they called him, at their head. He soon burst open both the outward and inner door, struck old Robert Griffith, our landlord, several times, kicked his wife, and with 20 full-mouthed oaths and curses demanded, "Where is the parson?" Robert Griffith came up and desired me to go into another room where he locked me in. The captain followed him quickly, broke open 1 or 2 doors, and got on a chair to look on the top of a bed. But his foot slipping, as he was not a man made for climbing, he fell down backward all his length. He rose leisurely, turned about, and with his troop walked away. I then went down to a small company of the poor people and spent half an hour with them in prayer. About 9, as we were preparing to go to bed, the house was beset again. The captain burst in first. Robert Griffith's daughter was standing in the passage with a pail of water, with which, whether with design or in her fright, I know not, she covered him from head to foot. He cried as well as he could, "Murder! Murder!" and stood very still for some moments. In the meantime, Robert Griffith stepped by him and locked the door. Finding himself alone, he began to change his voice and cry, "Let me out! Let me out!" Upon his giving his word and honor that none of the rest should come in, they opened the door and all went away together. Wesley interviews Mrs. Pilkington. Thursday, April 12th, Dublin. I breakfasted with one of the society and found she had a lodger I little thought of. It was the famous Mrs. Pilkington, who soon made an excuse for following me upstairs. I talked with her seriously about an hour. We then sang Happy Magdalene. She appeared to be exceedingly struck. How long the impression may last, God knows. Sunday, May 20th, Cork. Understanding the usual place of preaching would by no means contain those who desire to hear, about 8 I went to Hammond's Marsh. The congregation was large and deeply attentive. A few of the rabble gathered at a distance, but by little and little they drew near and mixed with the congregation. I have seldom seen a more quiet and orderly assembly at any church in England or Ireland. In the afternoon, a report being spread abroad that the mayor designed to hinder my preaching on the marsh in the evening, I desired Mr. Skelton and Mr. Jones to wait upon him and inquire concerning it. Mr. Skelton asked if my preaching there would be disagreeable to him, adding, "Sir, if it would, Mr. Wesley will not do it." He replied warmly, "Sir, I have no mobbing." Mr. Skelton replied, "Sir, there was none this morning." He answered, "There was. There are not churches and meeting houses enough. I will have no more mobs or riots." Mr. Skelton replied, "Sir, neither Mr. Wesley nor they that heard him made either mobs or riots." He plainly replied, "I will have no more preaching, and if Mr. Wesley attempts to preach, I am prepared for him." I began preaching in our own house soon after 5. Mr. Mayer, meantime, was walking in the change and giving orders to the town drummers and to his sergeants, doubtless to go down and keep the peace. They accordingly came down to the house with an innumerable mob attending them. They continued drumming, and I continued preaching till I had finished my discourse. When I came out, the mob immediately closed me in. Observing one of the sergeants standing by, I desired him to keep the king's peace, but he replied, "Sir, I have no orders to do that." As soon as I came into the street, the rabble threw whatever came to hand, but all went by me or flew over my head, nor do I remember that one thing touched me. I walked on straight through the midst of the rabble, looking every man before me in the face, and they opened on the right and left till I came near Dance Bridge. A large party had taken possession of this, one of whom was bawling out, "Now, hey for the Romans!" When I came up, they likewise shrank back, and I walked through them to Mr. Jenkins' house. But a papist stood just within the door and endeavored to hinder my going till one of the mob, I suppose aiming at me but missing, knocked her down flat. I then went in, and God restrained the wild geese so that not one attempted to follow me. But many of the congregation were more roughly handled, particularly Mr. Jones, who was covered with dirt and escaped with his life almost by miracle. The main body of the mob then went to the house, brought out all the seats and benches, tore up the floor, the door, the frames of the windows, and whatever woodwork remained, part of which they carried off for their own use, and the rest they burned in the open street. Finding there was no probability of their dispersing, I went to Alderman Pembroke, who immediately desired Mr. Alderman Winthrop, his nephew, to go down to Mr. Jenkins, with whom I walked up the street, none giving me an unkind or disrespectful word. Wesley burned in effigy. Monday the 21st, I rode on to Bandon. From 3 in the afternoon till past 7, the mob of Cork marched in grand procession and then burned me in effigy near Dance Bridge. Wednesday the 23rd, the mob was still patrolling the streets, abusing all that were called Methodists, and threatening to murder them and pull down their houses if they did not leave this way. Thursday the 24th, they again assaulted Mr. Stockdale's house, broke down the boards he had nailed up against the windows, destroyed what little remained of the window frames and shutters, and damaged a considerable part of his goods. Friday the 25th, one Roger O'Farrell fixed up an advertisement at the public exchange that he was ready to head any mob in order to pull down any house that should dare to harbor a swaddler, a name given to Mr. Senek first by a Popish priest who heard him speak of a child wrapped in swaddling clothes and probably did not know the expression was in the Bible, a book he was not much acquainted with.